At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, guys. We've got a special podcast with somebody I highly respect, Riley Gaines. Almost to say who is standing in the right. And if you disagree with that, which you're entitled to disagree with that, that's okay. That's America. That's your First Amendment right. But to even be painted as controversial now in certain ways, that's ridiculous.
Beyond,
yeah.
To put it lightly.
Well, so Riley Gaines is well known, probably the most prominent woman's activist for keeping women's sports female, as it says on her t-shirt. But, you know, first off, I told Riley before we started here, we've been up for about 4 days. My wife just powered through one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And I've had two children before, but I wasn't really there for their births just due to the combat deployments. And I've never seen anything like that, like, just changed my world. How difficult birth is.
That's the power of women. Your wife's a warrior.
Change me. We had a little girl. She's in the NICU right now. She's going to be okay. But thank you for joining us. You're on your tour right now, hitting college campuses.
That's right. I am. First of all, congratulations to you. Your little baby girl. That's exactly what this fight is about for me personally. But yes, just started the Take Back Title IX college campus tour, getting on college campuses. Last year, spoke on 45 different college campuses. Starting right here in Texas.
This is day one. How many universities?
17 this semester, and we'll go on to do many more next semester. So day one, but super exciting stuff. It's pretty cool to be able to get on these college campuses. Oftentimes, like tonight at UT Austin, really putting yourself into the belly of the beast, I think is really the best way to describe it. But what I've seen in doing that, I'm talking Harvard, Princeton, Cal Berkeley.
That's enemy territory.
So you think, but what I've noticed in doing that is there are so many students and community members, for that matter, who are so excited. It's like they're desperate to hear the truth. I really don't say anything overly profound. It's just kind of matter of fact, like you said, really common sense stuff. So really cool to be able to engage and mobilize and equip my generation, younger people. It's certainly a whirlwind, to say the least, but a cool opportunity.
What is the format of how these go down on universities? I'm assuming it's probably 1 to 2 hours.
Yeah, they'll typically have like a rented out auditorium somewhere on campus. I'll speak for maybe 30, 40 minutes and open it up for questions. And that's fun. It's interactive. You get people who, you know, are there in support, who have, you know, really inquisitive questions, want to be called to action in some way. And then you get questions from people who disagree with you, varying levels of disagreement. Some people who maybe initially disagreed, but come with an open mind. And then of course you have some who were never going to be convinced, no matter what I said. So it's a fun way to be able to interact in that way. And what I've realized is there's really no way that you can trip me up on this topic specifically. You just can't. There's nothing someone could say to me that would make me say, you know what? You're right. Men do belong in women's sports? Nothing.
It is almost, to me, this is a moral issue of right and wrong, but it seems like it's become a total partisan issue between blue and red. Is that probably pretty accurate?
Definitely accurate in terms of how it's represented by the media and how our elected officials are voting at federal level, state level. That's fallen almost entirely on party lines. Take, for example, Representative Stubbe in Florida. He introduced the Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act in the U.S. House, which 219 Republicans voted in favor of, and all 230 Democrats, every single last one of them, voted in opposition of protecting women and girls in sports. But I'll tell you what's unique. That's how it's portrayed, but the reality of it is this really is a unifying issue. 90, I would say, it polls at least 80%. That's what the most recent Gallup poll shows. But I would argue it's even higher than 80% of the general public agrees that men should not be in women's sports.
Did you ever get to talk to any of those male Democrats that voted against it?
Of course.
And say, hey, you've got a daughter. How can you justify
I'll tell
this?
You what's crazy is I've had the opportunity to testify many times before Congress and the Senate, which is...
Which you kicked ass, by the way.
Thank you. It's unfathomable to me that a 23-year-old, recently 24, but 23 at the time, that I have to go to D.C. to sit in front of Congress, I mean, the beating heart of the American Republic, and explain to them that men and women are different. And then to watch on as they're on the other side of this table, and they have these super confused looks on their faces. But I'll tell you, I was before the Senate recently, and Senator Cory Booker, he came up to me before and he said, hey, look, you know, I played football at Stanford. I totally agree with you. This is insane. And then he gets on the other side of the table and totally grills me. And I just remember thinking, you coward. You weak-kneed, spineless, morally bankrupt coward. But that's the reality of it.
It's the system they operate in. If mm-hmm. they go against the grain, then they're done. Which maybe, no. Unequivocally, the system needs to change.
Yes.
And the fact is, this comes down to moral courage to me, that if my side is wrong, then I'm going to stand against all 200 of my party members and say, no, I'm not voting for this. But that's
because you have a backbone.
Yeah. And that's hard to do. But on a subject like this, it just doesn't strike me as like, no, this is not a hard subject. This is yes, or this is no. And the whole thing of men and women's bathrooms, especially the whole YMCA debacle with you know, supporting men in women's bathrooms, and you're talking about teenage girls, it's just...
It's sick is what it is, really. And I can speak to this, the locker room aspect in particular, given what we dealt with, of to kind of set the scene, a 6'4" man who is fully naked, fully exposing himself, fully intact with male genitalia. And I mean, inches away from where we were simultaneously fully undressed. It's feelings of, I mean, like, it's awkward, it's embarrassing, it's uncomfortable, it's humiliating. It was innate for us as women to just to cover ourselves when we heard a man's voice in that locker room. But really, I mean, it was feelings of a violation. It was an utter violation and betrayal. That's how I felt. I felt betrayed. I'll never forget that feeling because my university, the NCAA, these were organizations and institutions that I loved, that I trusted, that I believed had my best interest as an athlete, as a student. But they didn't. They didn't care about me. The message I got loud and clear was that I existed to validate the feelings of this man. Who cared about my feelings or my privacy? Make sure the man feels comfortable and included, and don't you dare question it or oppose it or else.
I do. I want to hold on to that one because I that one is powerful, and I want to talk. You're probably tired of talking about the Leah Thomas incident, but I do want to hit on that. Before we do, people rarely get to know the person leading up to that incident that became a igniting spark for where you're going in life. But where were you born, raised, family? What did your parents do?
Nashville, Tennessee. I'm a proud lifelong Tennessean. There's not a lot of us that are native anymore because all of you Californians are making your way over to Tennessee. You're realizing how wonderful it is. Stop it, please. But my family, many generations back, my dad, he was an SEC Hall of Famer. He played football, went on to play in the league for a good bit. My mom, she played Division I softball. My oldest sister went to Ole Miss. She played softball. My brother is in college. He plays football. My youngest sister, she is 15. She is an elite level gymnast. She will go on to do, she's probably the best athlete of all of us, to be honest with you. She'll go on to do incredible things. My dad's got four brothers. They all played 10, 12 years in the league. So come from a family of athletes, Super Bowl winners, really cool stuff.
Underachievers, underachievers. I'm waiting
That's what we are. I know it. So I come from just, you picture your typical Southern Tennessee, you know, good old boy family. And that's what I came from. Church every Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. My parents, of course, are still together. I'm so fortunate to have, you realize this when you get older. But I'm so fortunate to have the family that I do. We work out still together every morning. Me, my mom, my dad, my older sister, younger sister, my grandma. We work out together every single morning. And so it's a blessing.
So when you graduated from Kentucky, did you move back to?
I moved back home.
What about values?
Your first and foremost, before anything, I'm a Christian. Grew up, like I said, in the church. We would get grounded. Our dad gave us the option every week. He said, you know, I'm never going to force you to go to church. You know, I'm not going to drag you to the car, but if you don't come, you're grounded. Your phone's taken, all the things, which is a drag, right? When you're 10 years old and you're sitting in the pews and you're the youngest one in the congregation by at least 70 years. The amount of little visitor cards in the back of the pews that me and my siblings played tic-tac-toe or connect the dots or hangman or whatever game we could possibly play is definitely ungodly. But that being said, being a Christian first, my values have pretty much always aligned conservatively. I have a lot of people who, you know, trolls on social media who will comment and say, you know, this is what you voted for, these policies, don't come running back now. And it's like, no, I would have never voted for any sort of politician or policies that would have allowed what happened to me and my teammates and girls around the country at any point in my life. I definitely, you know, kind of lit this fire under me, but always been Christian, which of course aligns conservative.
Now, the church activities for a young person sound pretty on par. We grew up Catholic. So the sermons are so boring.
Right.
I disliked church. I don't want to say hated.
Yeah.
Disliked it as a kid. So highly recruited out of high school for
That's
swimming.
Right.
You chose Kentucky.
I did.
Full ride.
Yes. I could have gone anywhere that I wanted to go, but I am biased. Having a family full of SEC athletes, the SEC is the best conference. Knew I wanted to stay in the SEC, did not know I wanted to go to University of Kentucky. I thought I was going to be a Florida Gator, really. Ever since sixth grade, I had Florida shirts and attire. No one in my family went to Florida, but that's where I thought I was going to go. And I remember taking my official visit. Of course, you know, you get your visits. I picked where I was going to go. I took my trip to Florida. And I'm on campus. I don't know if I had just worked it up in my head to be something different than what it was. And I was enjoying my time, but it didn't live up to the hype. And I remember talking to one of the support staff who was kind of assisting us and walking us around during the visit. And I asked him, I'm like, how do you know if you're at the right place? Because there's lots of pros and cons to weigh. He said, I'll tell you, we're going to go to a football game and we're going to take you on the field and you'll hear the fight song. The fight song's going to play. And if you get chills when that fight song plays, you'll know you're at the right place. And so we go on the field and the fight song starts to play. And I just remember looking around and thinking, why is everyone doing this? This is the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. And orange is objectively ugly. I don't look good in orange. I'm not going to this university. But I'll tell you, I was at this coach at Kentucky. I was not interested in Kentucky at all. I thought the only things as a Tennessean that came from Kentucky were like meth and Mountain Dew. Was not interested, okay? But this coach, whatever the official date was, either June or July 15th, where coaches could start reaching out, I'm talking 12 o'clock on the dot, midnight, I get a call from this coach. And again, I let it go to voicemail. But he incessantly sent me emails and texts and voicemails and calls. And finally, I was like, you know what? Maybe I should take a trip here, an unofficial visit for that matter, just to get him to stop pestering me. My boyfriend at the time, who's not my wonderful 6'4", really cute British husband, who now living in Nashville has this awesome country British accent.
You said, when I met him, I'm like, are you from Louisville?
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, I'm not Louisville, Louisiana.
Louisiana, and it's like a laughing. Cajun accent, yeah. Right? But my boyfriend at the time was a big Kentucky fan. And so I thought, I'll just, you know, we'll be able to go to a basketball game. This was before Kentucky was losing to like the Peacocks, the St. Norrisburg Peacocks or whoever it was. I thought it'll be a cool little like girlfriend thing to do to take him to a basketball game. But I'll tell you what, I fell in love with the university. I fell in love with the team, and that coach who was pestering me became my best friend all 4 years I was there. The resources that they poured into us outside of athletics and academics, into our service, into us as people. I mean, it was the best place that I could have gone. And we were really successful as a team there. Won SEC championships. We beat Florida every year, just saying. Finished, you know, top 10 in the NCAA. We had a very good career at Kentucky.
And loved the university outside of
loved it. We dealt with
athletics.
COVID during my college career, which
you
was
one of those, huh?
Oh, and it was miserable.
Wait, so junior, senior year?
Hit at the end of my sophomore year, about 3 days before we were supposed to leave for our national championships, which again is the meet you work all year, really all your life for. The world shut down. We got kicked off campus and sent home.
And the championships were?
Canceled, scrubbed. And so we were robbed of an NCAA championships in that way, which made it even worse my senior year to be robbed in a different way. It just felt like we had been, I mean, the rug had just been stripped out from under us. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Kentucky is, what's the town?
Lexington.
Lexington. I knew that.
Lexington. We've got
a lot of fun.
Like I said, I really did. I thought like Kentucky was filled with those like Appalachia mountain people, but I found out they also have horses and bourbon, and I do like those things. So it was great. It was
Louisville
the best.
Is a great place.
Yeah,
very, very close to the Louisville Metro Police Department. Good people.
No doubt.
So, you know, you work your senior, well, you work all 4 years plus your high school and all the time you put in. You get to the NCAA championships. You win, tied, with a 6'4" male, which is awesome, by the way.
I mean, kind of embarrassing for him.
It actually
couldn't
is.
Even beat me.
I mean, how tall are you?
About 5'5", 5'6", yeah. So, I mean, he's 8 inches taller than me, just about, yeah.
That's insane.
Well, and not even just that. I mean, if you look at him on the block compared to the rest of us, his feet take up the entire...
Yeah.
Like, it just is... It was the most absurd visual, whether you're a swimmer or not. I mean, you didn't have to be a swimmer to look down and understand. I mean, he stuck out like a sore thumb. And not even just his physical appearance, watching his stroke compared to the rest of us. Totally different stroke, a totally different cadence, off the walls, underwater kicks. It was stuck out like a sore thumb.
Well, before even getting to that point, knowing that he had transferred from men's swimming at Penn to, I mean, you knew you were going up against a male. The conversations had to take place of, hey, this isn't fair. I don't want to be a part of this. But then you don't want to rob yourself of the experience of
right.
something you'd fought for so long. What were the conversations with the NCAA? What was University of Kentucky and SEC's sort of stance on it? Did they, I guess, submit a letter of disapproval? What conversations were taking place prior to that?
So when we first found out about this, I was team captain. And so very early on, I sat my team down, you know, created this environment. Hey, this is what's going on. I'm not going to tell you how to feel, but let's have a space where we can express, you know, individually and personally how we want to go about this, how we feel about this. And what I found in doing that was that of my team of 40 girls, pretty big team, 38 of us felt the exact same way, that this was wrong, that this was unfair, that we didn't want to have to compete against this man. But I mean, our coach was very supportive of us. He thought it was wrong. I had a coach actually who was decided amidst all of this to begin transitioning, which added another layer of pressure, to be honest. That's not something I've really ever talked about, but she began to identify as a man, came into practice one day, cut her hair off, and decided that that's what we had to refer to her as moving forward, which, again, I don't really care. That's fine. If you want to dress like a man, cut your hair like a man, by all means. Didn't make me think any less of her as a coach or anything like that. I'm not going to call her a him because, again, as a Christian, I believe that's wrong. But if you want to go by a different name, sure, whatever. She didn't like me by the end of this. But my head coach was very supportive. The university, the athletic side, my athletic director, Mitch Barnhart, he's been there for 20 plus years. He's really one of the greats in the world of ADs. Incredibly supportive. We stay in touch all the time. He's a wonderful Christian. He leads by example. He's great, was very supportive. The academic side of the university, on the other hand, that's where all of the DEI reinforcement. I had to go to sensitivity training where they taught me about pronouns and they taught me how to be kind, what they labeled as kind. They taught me how to be inclusive. I had to keep going through this training until they were satisfied with how I had been re-educated. That's literally the verbiage that they used.
Yeah. If we look back at history.
Right.
That's all I'm going to say.
Exactly. But that's the part they're not teaching us anymore, you know, of what this has historically meant, the same type of propaganda, really, that they're pushing forward. I mean, we're not being taught what that even means anymore. I've had to kind of do this deep dive into the same tactics that they use.
Which are genius, by the way.
Of course, it's effective.
It was a long-term game, and they played it well.
But it works.
During that training, did you initially say, hey, I don't believe in this, I disagree with you? At some point, were you pulled aside and just say, hey, just finish the training? And
yeah, of course. I've never been one to shy away from how I feel. I will say for a while, it worked on me. Even as someone who, I've always been a leader. I've always stood up for others, especially my friends, my teammates. I've always been that advocate for them. But even still, I never believed it, but there was a part of me that was kind of like, is it worth it to even push back? How about we just go along to get along and it's over in a few weeks and we move on with our lives? But then once we got to that national championships, I was overwhelmed with guilt for even thinking that. I really was. I felt responsible.
Interesting.
Like it was just this feeling of immense, like I had participated in the farce by even thinking that. And so that's a big part in why I felt the need to speak out is because I just felt guilty. I felt just as bad as the people who enforced these policies by thinking that it would be easier to just brush it off.
When the incident goes down post-race, again, you talked about you had faith, and we're all designed to respect authority. NCAA
of course.
Is an authority figure which you trusted. As this is going down and they tell you, hey, for media purposes, Leah's going to get to hold up the trophy. Yours will be sent through the mail. It must have been a whirlwind, almost just completely overwhelming to the point where I don't know if you resisted, you may have. How did that all go down and how were you feeling in that moment?
Yeah, I think back to that. And like you said, we tied. So we went the exact same time down to the 100th of a second, which is pretty crazy when you're racing for, you know, a minute and 40-ish seconds and not even 1/100th separated us, which you can't tell me that's not divine intervention. But anyways, we go behind the awards podium. Like you said, the official says, hey, great job. You tied. We don't account for ties. We have one trophy and we're going to give that trophy to Leah. Riley, you don't get one. Sorry. But we've been advised, you know, when pictures are being taken, it's crucial that the trophy's in Leah's hands. You can pose with this one, but you have to give yours back. Leah takes her trophy home. You go home empty-handed, end of story. And you asked me how I felt. I just remember, like,
at Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Having just competed, of course, my heart rate was still high. My adrenaline was still pumping. And so the filter, which I already don't really have one of those on my good days, but it just, my first thought was the first thing I said. And the first thought that I had was, isn't this everything that Title IX was passed to prevent from happening? What do you mean you're going to give the trophy to the man in the women's 200 free?
Did your coach have a time? I mean, did you have time to go talk to your coach and just say, this is wrong?
My coach was right there with me. And he knew how hard I worked, you know? He saw me day in, day out, give it everything I got for the 6 hours a day we were in the pool, training 15,000 yards, 10 miles every single day. He saw me there. He knew my goals. He was more frustrated than I was. He's back there with me, you know, telling these officials this is BS and you know it, all the things. But I just remember standing on the podium, sharing my placement with this man, again, who's towering over me, holding this trophy I know I have to give back. And it was like this realization wiped over me of, Riley, you've been waiting for someone else to say something for you. Because I was waiting for a coach. I was waiting for someone within the NCAA or someone with political power or some other swimmer or someone's dad, quite frankly, to come down there and yank this man out of our locker rooms. But it was in that moment on that podium when I realized, Riley, how in the world could you expect someone to stand up for you if you're not even willing to stand up for you? This has to come from you all as women, as female athletes. And so it was on that podium where I decided, enough is enough. I will say something. I didn't know what I was going to say. I didn't know who I was going to say it to. But I knew this was a matter that I was no longer willing to shy away from.
You said divine intervention. Because I was going to ask you if that was the moment that chose the path you're on now, or if it was a conversation with the family of, hey, this is where I need to go. I've been charged to protect women and women's sports for the rest of my life.
I think I tried to ignore, not really ignore, but I didn't want to believe that was my fate, because who in their right mind would want to do what I've spent my time doing? You know, it's absurd. It's there are perks to it for sure, but on a scale of one to enjoyable, I don't know if it meets the mark. But nonetheless, it's worth it. It's necessary, and it's a fight I'm willing to be involved in. But for a while, I just wanted to say, you know, I'll do this for a little bit, but I have plans that I made for me. You know, like, I've got a career path. I was in dental school to be a dentist. I was actually specializing in endodontics, which is root canals, weirdly enough. That's what I thought I was going to do. That's what I prepared to do. And I believe that God would use me in the way that I prepared myself for what the plans I had made. But I was so wrong. That's absolutely not what he does. He doesn't call those who are prepared for the fights that he picks. He prepares those who he calls. And I see that so clearly now, right? I didn't know anything about our government at the time. Like I said, I never had to take a government course, never had to take any history course past ninth grade in high school, which is incredibly concerning when you really think about it. I knew we had three branches. Didn't know what they did. I still don't know what they do. I don't even think they know what they do. My public speaking courses in college, my face would turn the color of a tomato. So by no means did I feel prepared. By gosh, he uniquely prepares you. Playing a sport prepared me to do this. It teaches you how to be a leader. It teaches you how to set goals and work relentlessly to achieve those goals. I just feel him providing me with strength and wisdom and direction and protection and all the things. And it's far more impactful doing what I'm doing than it will ever be being a dentist.
I think that's probably the most selfless thing that identifies a leader, is the willing to put your personal aspirations aside to become a guardian of young future female athletes and leaders in this nation. That's, I would lose zero sleep over that. And I'm sure you do.
No doubt. Without
a doubt. You were already a well-known name in women's athletics, primarily swimming. You become an overnight sensation, maybe not for the reasons that you wanted. How did it start with this path? Was it him simply going to go on as many media outlets and talk, or do you start seeking out mentors that understand policy and government? I mean, how did this whole thing unravel? And on top of that, did you have a desire to continue in swimming, potentially to represent the nation at the Olympics? Because you were competitive to do that with your athletics.
To address the second part first, I knew when I was graduating, I was done. I could have held on for another 2 years and you know, competed for a chance at the Olympics. I did in 2016. I did in 2020, which rolled over into 2021 because of COVID. I, you know, competed at the highest stage, and it's an incredible experience, you know, being in the pool with Katie Ledecky. I mean, the best, the most impressive and accomplished, the swimmers this world has ever seen. I remember actually my first time at Olympic trials. I'm 15 years old. I'm one of the youngest people there. I was so nervous. Gosh, I just was overwhelmed with nerves and emotion and all the things. And I walk into the big natatorium. It was in Omaha that first day. I walk through the glass doors. I click the elevator button. You had to get on the elevator to go down to the pool deck. And the elevator doors open, and it's Michael Phelps. And I'm like, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? I don't belong here. I, of course, you know, very hesitantly, like, I'm fangirling at the Olympic trials. I'm like, can I have a picture with you? He was so kind, of course. But by the time I had graduated college, I was ready to move on because, again, I was ready for dental school. But to answer the first part now of what this progression really looked like, it's pretty well known that swimming is not a sport that garners a lot of media attention. But this meet, of course, was different. It did. There were reporters, left-leaning, right-leaning, everything in between, who were on the pool deck, reaching out on social media, finding, you know, your name on the heat sheet. They would reach out to you. My inbox was filled with reporters after this tie who wanted a comment or a quote that they could take back to their publisher. I'd been advised, do not talk to media. Our university told us you were not allowed to talk to media. If you do talk to media, it has to be, you know, coordinated through our people. And so I thought, okay, well, I'm going to talk to them, but they want to coordinate it. That's fine. I sent the request over to, it was actually the Daily Wire. That's the one I chose. I wanted to do. I sent it to our media lady thinking she would coordinate it. And she said, thanks. I declined it for you. And that's when I was like, okay, screw you guys. I'm taking you out of the equation. Then I'll talk to them on my own. And I did. And that led to a few more interviews and things, but it died down relatively quickly. I just started, I'll tell you, traveling state to state to testify in legislative bodies, states that were introducing their some form of their Save Women's Sports Act. In Texas, for example, it was introduced by Representative Valerie Swanson. I show up here. These people are like, who are you? You know, you're not with some sort of outside group. You know, what are you doing here? You're not from this state. Your testimony is so impactful, but who are you? And that's just what I started doing. And that's when I think it started to gain traction a little bit. And since then, it's just been full speed ahead.
Were you prepared to become the face of this this movement? Which undoubtedly, I mean, unquestionably, you are the face of this movement.
I don't think you could ever be fully prepared for all that it has entailed, both good and bad, right? In terms of the negative, I could care less. At first, it was hard to read some of the things. I could care less now. Transphobic means nothing to me. They'll call you. I mean, any name under the sun, you bet your bottom dollar, I've been called it. I realized these things, people were commenting, it was coming from people with no profile pictures. They wouldn't attach their name to anything. They're just losers is what they are. People who would say, you know, your hair extensions look bad. I'm like, this is my real hair. I think that's a compliment.
That's
like,
what you got?
Yeah, right? Yeah. Or people who would say, you know, maybe you should have just trained harder. Maybe you should have just swam faster.
It was Keith Oberfield.
Oh, Oberfeld, gosh, that guy.
He's a quack.
Beyond.
But yeah. the gall to put that statement out there.
Right.
Have you ever come face-to-face with him?
I wish you I would come face-to-face with Keith Olbermann.
Well, let's make that happen.
This is a public, we should have like some sort of fundraiser charity. Whoever wins in a race, me and Keith Olbermann are going to race, except he can't wear a Speedo because that would tarnish everyone's eyes and brains, but a race, and whoever wins gets to donate the proceeds to the charity of their choosing. So Keith Olbermann, you heard it here first.
That sounds like a challenge.
It is a challenge.
Okay, we're going to clip that one. Done.
So prepared for the bad, I don't think you can necessarily be prepared, but also the cool and good things that have come from it. I mean, I've been able to travel all over, to meet some of the most amazing people and leaders. I've spent an ample amount of time now with people like President Trump and I mean, just the coolest people you could possibly imagine. And the impact you get to have, right? It really is remarkable over these past 2 years what we've seen. Now, currently, working with teams and presidents of universities and athletic directors in the Mountain West Conference as it pertains to volleyball, and really just encouraging and providing support to these teams that are forfeiting their game and their match against San Jose State University because they have a male on their team. So to be able to have that sort of impact and to inspire others is it outweighs all of the negative 10 days out of 10.
For the viewers, listeners, within the past, I think, week, two universities within the Mountain West, both Boise, Wyoming,
Southern Utah State,
have all chosen to forfeit their matches to San Jose State, which has a transgender female on their team now.
A man. it is confusing.
There we go.
They deliberately make it confusing. See,
but that's a great point. Like, I'm conditioned now because I just don't want to deal with people's, bullshit. I just don't want to have the conversation. And I do want to make a point. You said earlier, hey, let people be people. Do your thing. I don't care who you love in the bathroom, what you want to call yourself. But once they start trying to impose that on you, that's a different subject.
Absolutely. And that's, again, people will say all the time, they'll say transphobic or that I'm anti-trans, but to be very clear, I'm not anti-trans. I'm, in the sense of a biblical worldview, I'm pro-trans because they're human beings, right? Mm-hmm. Like I am pro-humans, okay? But what I'm not is someone who is going to be steamrolled and told what I have to accept or celebrate. I can acknowledge every single human being as a person who has the same rights that I do, which is the rights to fair and safe competition, and that as women we're being denied those things. And so again, to be very, very clear, my stand is not anti anyone or anything. It is pro woman. It's pro reality. It's pro fairness. It's pro safety. It's pro equal opportunity.
What the intent of Title IX was,
yeah,
in its origin. You talk about impact. You're having an impact on a exponential level. Is there a specific moment of some father or mother or young girl reaching out through a letter, email, that sits with you, like that one story that sits with you?
You would just about die if you saw the messages I got on a daily basis. I can think of a few that have really stuck with me. One in particular, because it ended up gaining pretty national attention. There were five middle schoolers. So, I mean, these are 12-year-old girls in West Virginia who had to throw shot put against a boy. You know, they're reaching out to me. What do we do? And I will never forget one of the girls we were communicating over Instagram DM, and she messaged me and she said, "Are we not worthy of calling ourselves champions?" And I just remember like reading that and thinking to myself, it's so sad that these 12-year-olds, they're 12 years old, and that's the message they're receiving loud and clear, is that the adults who were supposed to be protecting them don't think that they're worthy of being, you know, called champions or in first place. They have to fight for second because a man wants to, or a boy in this case, is going to be deemed the champion. And I just remember thinking, like, how brave, how courageous, how tragic that these girls have to be able to take that stand for themselves. But they did. They got in the circle, right? They had their shot put. They geared up like they were going to throw. And all five of these girls walked out and they said, "We're not throwing against this boy." So that's one case in particular. I remember at that NCAA championships, actually, There was a girl who came up to me. She swam for NC State. She's their most decorated swimmer of all time, 31-time All-American. She's incredible. And I'll never forget, she came up to me and she was like, "Riley, like, I am so excited. I found somewhere else to change. It's the janitor's closet." And she was smiling ear to ear. And she said, "I'm so grateful for this janitor's closet." And again, I was just taken aback. Like, she just said she was grateful and truly meant it for this janitor's closet. And the other side calls this progress, because to me, that is not progress. That is regressive. That just took us back in time at least half a century. And she was beaming ear to ear because she knew there were no chance in this janitor's closet for her to be exploited in the way that we were. And so, I mean, I could keep going with these instances of just finding myself really taken aback by the movement and by what we're demanding of women and the cowardice of the adults, really.
I know what you mean. I got an email last week, somebody saying, "Hey, your podcast is really good." And that meant the world to me. I'm joking. It's a joke. I don't get this. Maybe one day.
So, definitely not after this one.
You were on a path. No. We've had Pete Hegseth talking about.
He's great.
Pete is good. I know he's
a Nashvillean.
Close to you. And it was about women in combat roles, and it was also about the transgender policies in the military, which are just counterculture to what we hold dear in the military. Again, not passing judgment on human beings. It's just not a fit right here. But I mean, you were 23 when they stood up the Riley Gaines Center at the Leadership Institute. That's got to be a record for, because usually it takes people full careers to get centers. What is the overall purpose that you want to achieve there?
Yeah, no, it's wild to again think about having the Riley Gaines Center, being a national best-selling author. Now that's crazy. I'm an executive producer on a big Fox special. I mean, absolutely insane stuff. But the Riley Gaines Center, super duper cool. It's again been something that's had real and measurable impact. It's what's one putting me on these college campuses. That's done through the center, and so it's been really effective in mobilizing and spreading awareness to the youth. Training. We offer many training programs, which is pretty cool. We just launched a new Title IX training. So many people don't. I didn't know what Title IX was, what it really did. I took it for granted, for sure. So we just launched a new Title IX training. We have all kinds of different media trainings and how to write a letter to your administrator types of trainings and really great stuff, providing, again, resources and support to those who find themselves in a position of something like what we face, or even people who just want to be proactive about this stuff. And so that's been great. We have lots of different initiatives like Project Boycott, which is a bit of a play on words because boycott. And being able to, again, provide support for those teams or girls who don't want to compete against boys, letting them know you don't have to. A lot of times their universities tell them, you know, you have to, you'll lose your scholarship, just like they told us. It's all fabricated. It's all a lie. They can't do that, just like they did with COVID, really, in terms of how they manipulated situations. So that's great. We're about to have Real Women's Day, which is on October 10th, which is the 10th day of the 10th month, which in Roman numerals is XX, which if you took biology 101, you know, are the female chromosomes. And so Real Women's Day, we're sending out activism kits all in 48 different states. And so what this is, it's a big net like they use in baseball, and a ball and a gun, a little speed clocking gun. And it's an interactive way, a big whiteboard to be able to, you know, you tally the speed of men versus women. And it's a fun way to prove what I have made myself blue in the face saying, and that men and women are different.
So, you may be blue in the face, and not to overly praise you, but it's being heard. With that, you've again, NCAA, and I don't care what they say, champion, best-selling author. You just said you've got your special TV series on Fox. You've done all these things, a leadership institute at the age of 24. Do you know where you want to go? Where is Riley Gaines going? Or are you just still sort of putting the dots together
yeah,
as it goes.
What I have realized is anytime I try and make a plan, it just like is just out the window. And so I feel like I'm just taking it day by day and really leaning in and trusting and listening to God, letting him be a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path, you know? And so, I pray about it daily. I hear all the time from politicians, I say, you know, I never thought I was going to do this, but I just felt called by God. And I just pray to God. I'm like, don't call me to politics, please. I might have to ignore you if you do that. Cause I'm not that crazy yet.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Would you make that decision if you feel it's the right path forward to
potentially
enact change?
I'll never rule it out, but I mean, I've had to see some, you know, people say, yes. Oh, it's corrupt.
Yeah.
It really is corrupt. And even on our side, even people with R's by their names, yeah. they're oftentimes yeah. our worst enemies. So having kind of seen this firsthand, I'm like, oh gosh, I don't want to be a puppet on a string like a lot of these people are, especially in D.C.
On October 10th, where will you be for Wednesday?
I will be actually speaking at a university in California, Cal Poly. So very excited for that. But we've got, last year it was read into congressional record on the floor by Representative McLean that Real Women's Day will be declared a national holiday. Senator Blackburn read it on the Senate floor. So lots of movement in D.C. on this day. Some different events and things there. Ambassadors at the center, other women really who have been impacted by the movement in a similar way. We'll be speaking on other college campuses. So very exciting stuff.
You've got a lot on your plate. Again, you're going to be on the road for what, 30, 60 days over this next?
That's
exhausting. Well, Riley, I can't thank you enough for joining us. I can't thank you enough for what you do on behalf of both my daughters and all the daughters of the nation. Keep doing what you're doing. And if people want to send criticism your way.
Hey, bring it on.
Yeah, bring it on.
Join the many. My ex is Riley_Gaines_. You can check out the RileyGainesCenter.org. If you have kids in college, hopefully coming to a college campus near you sometime over the next month or two. So you can check that out there. But really, I just want to thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. Super cool. But also for your sacrifice and your service, because that's really what bravery is. I get called brave all the time. It blows my mind. It's people like you who are brave, and we appreciate you. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. If you met the guys I served with, if there wasn't much sacrifice. Nonsense, putting up with a lot of nonsense. But no,
yeah,
hey,
fun.
Guys, we will drop all those handles. Do me a favor. Go follow Riley on those programs to keep in up to date with what she's doing, especially if you're a mother or a father that has a daughter. This is just right and wrong, bottom line to me. And you know, bravery comes in all different forms. And what I found is there's no deficit of physical courage, but there is a total deficit of moral courage, especially to step up against institutions or systems that want to keep you quiet. And you're doing exactly that.
So, bring it on, right?
Thank you. All right, guys, thanks for joining us. Another episode of the Everyday Warrior podcast. We'll see you again.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.